Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
Hi, my name is Len Adams. I'm the CEO and founder of Adams Consulting Group, ACG Resources. We are a full-service executive search and staffing firm based in New York City.
Awesome, Len. Thanks so much for making time to join us on the Ivy Podcast. Before, you know, I want to spend some time talk about your current company, your role, but give us a thumbnail version of your career timeline, your background, where you come from, and some of the amazing accomplishments.
Sure, absolutely. So as you may be able to tell by my accent, I'm a product of New York City. I grew up in an area called the Lower East Side, which is right now a very hip area in New York. It wasn't so hip when I was growing up there, but I survived it. Grew up, in Manhattan. Been in the staffing business really my entire life. I started out working for someone when I was in high school. Back then it wasn't called staffing. Then it was an employment agency. That's what we called it back in the 70s when I started, late 60s. So you can do the math and figure out how long I've been around. But I was really a teenager when I started. And I really just fell in love with the business. You know, it's a different business today than it was back then. But just, you know, the work that we did and the work that we do, I just think is very important. Okay, we provide help for people that need help with their career, and we solve problems for clients. And to me, there's nothing much better than that.
Oh, absolutely. And thanks for providing that background. Very, very diverse and interesting. So tell us a little bit about, you know, your current company. What is the mission? What are you guys trying to accomplish? And just overall vision there.
Sure, absolutely. So I started ACG, I guess, just about 19 years ago. It'll be 19 years in August. I worked for the other firm really for all the years leading up to that, from being a teenager until 19 years ago. And then for a number of reasons, which would take a much longer podcast to do, I decided it was time to open up my own firm. So I did 19 years ago, a deer in the headlights, you know, having had the I won't say the luxury, but the safety net of working for someone and then going on my own at a time when I had kids in high school and college and a mortgage and all the things that go with it. But and, you know, in 2002, the recession was pretty rampant, you know, right? Business wasn't that good. We were just coming off of a year after 9/11. So the economy wasn't great. But I said, you know what, if I'm ever going to do it, I'm going to do it now. So the mission was to stay alive back then. And I was fortunate that I had someone come with me shortly after I started who worked for me previously. And we just grew it from there. We're now, 12 people, three of whom are my family. My sons and daughter are in business with me. And we've just been growing the firm. We're going to be adding on several more people over the next couple of months. And, you know, our mission is just to keep growing the business. As you could tell from looking at me, I'm not a young kid, but I love the business and I really have no intention to stop. I'm going to keep going until, as my kids say, they're going to give me the toy phone and the make-believe computer and make me think I'm working at some point. But I think I'll still be sharp enough to keep going.
I love that. That's awesome. That's great. And that's amazing, you know, for you to be able to keep that in the family and have your children involved. I think that's so cool. It's just
I'm very fortunate, even with the staff I have. I mean, I have a staff of people that have been with me quite a long time, and they really are like family. So, you know, when I say we're a family business, we're really a group of people that are like family. You know, we enjoy working together, and, you know, they do a good job. I'm very fortunate.
That's, you know, it goes without saying in terms of the culture that you've built within the organization. So what type of staffing recruiting that you guys really focus on? What is your domain niche area?
Sure. That's an interesting question because I started out in financial services for many years, and that's still a mainstay of ours. So it's financial services, it's insurance, and everything else. I mean, we touch on food services. We touch on cybersecurity. We just picked up a nice pre-IPO company that's in the energy sector. So we take on a lot of things that are interesting and maybe different. So we made the decision a couple of years ago to stop being just a specialist firm and really be a generalist firm. So we'll take on almost anything. We never accept a position if we don't feel we can fill it. Okay. So we'll turn away things if we don't think we can do it. But you know, we do retained work, we do contingency, and we have a temporary staffing group as well. So mm-hmm. we're really a full service boutique firm.
Wow, that's awesome. That's great. And with the current market conditions, I'm pretty sure you guys busier than ever. I hear that on a daily basis. And in terms of the different trends and ideas that really excite you these days from your industry perspective, what are you very passionate about these days? What do you think is kind of the next big thing?
Well, I'm very passionate about technology, believe it or not, for a mature individual. I just embraced it. You know, I talk about this often with colleagues and people I know in the business a long time. You know, I came from the viewpoint of index cards and paper, and then we went to fax, and that was a big thing. And now everything is automated, and everything is technology. And I just think that you have to keep up with the technology to stay in business. So I never wanted to be a dinosaur and say, well, we've always done it this way, so we can't change. I always look at things that are ahead of the curve and try to keep up with it. So I think artificial intelligence is probably something that's coming of age. I don't believe it's going to replace the human factor in our business, because people always forget that our business is called human resources. And I think artificial intelligence has a place, but you still need what I call the gut and the ability to talk to someone and look them in the eye and get a sense for, you know, the soft skills that artificial intelligence, I don't believe, is really going to solve. But I think there'll be a place for it. And, you know, and certainly I have a lot of automation that automates a lot of functions and processes for us. And you know, I think that's probably very exciting to me, at least in the business.
Right, absolutely. You know, that's, you know, right on point in terms of advanced technologies not being a replacer, but more of an enabler for a lot of the business functions and whatever.
Keep things up.
Exactly. So automation, I think that's super exciting. So as you partner and work with a lot of different companies and help them find, whether that's contingent worker or an executive, mm-hmm. Talk to us a little bit about the strategies that really help you contribute towards the organization building and fostering that culture of innovation through exceptional candidates that you bring to them.
Sure. Now, are you asking me with when we work with a client? Is that the question?
Yeah, absolutely. Hiring organization, yeah.
Sure. It's interesting. When we take on a new client, myself and one of the account execs, whether it's my sons or one of the other staff members, we get them on the phone and we probably spend 45 minutes to an hour asking questions. And we tell them up front, we ask a lot of questions for a number of reasons. Number one, we're probably somewhat inquisitive by nature, so we like to know what's behind what's going on in the company. Why is the growth there? Why is the open position there? What's behind it? And we really like to get under the hood to find out what's motivating them to hire and what's going to motivate them to hire someone and what are the important factors. So I think, you know, the fact that we ask so many questions and try to really become a partner, we don't want to just be one of 40 firms. And quite frankly, when in most cases, we won't take on too many things that are, we're one of 40 firms. We like to be one of one or one of two, or maybe one of three. We don't want to get into a shooting match where it's whoever gets the resume there first. That's I don't think that brings any value to anybody, us or the client.
Right, absolutely. No, those are very interesting strategies and can agree more with you from that perspective, that it then becomes a quantity volume game.
Right.
From that standpoint. So absolutely. So as you collaborate and work with a lot of these different organizations, I'm pretty sure a lot of conversations is also around how they structure the overall workforce, when it comes to coming out of pandemic, you know, being fully virtual and now designing kind of the hybrid model, so to say, or bringing folks back to on-site. What have you been seeing these days, kind of also from a perspective of future of work? How, you know, what do you see coming up, and how do you help your organizations make some of those decisions?
That's the $64 million question.
Right.
Anybody has the answer to right now. What we're seeing, and by the way, I should tell you, we've been virtual for 18 years, okay? When I started my firm, we had some small space. I kept space, but we used it rarely, only with one of my other partners. So we've been virtual, and I know that it works. I've had discussions with clients over these last year where some clients went virtual because they had to. Some clients weren't sure. And the discussion has always centered around, well, I don't know that I want to keep somebody remote or hybrid, because how do I know I have the right person? And my response to that is, if they're not the right person, they're not the right person, whether they're in office or home. So if you hire right up front, it doesn't matter whether the person is sitting in your office or if they're 3,000 miles away. As long as you set the expectations, you communicate, and you motivate, okay? I don't really think it matters. Now, yes, there may be some positions you need to be in the office, but I think we're going to see a hybrid model as the new norm. You know, there's an old saying, once they've left the farm for the city, how do you get them back? And, you know, that genie has kind of come out of the bottle. There were studies I read several months ago that productivity in most industries was up 60% with people working virtually. So now with the employees recognizing that they can work from home and be productive and not miss a beat and maybe have a better work-life balance, I think it's going to be difficult to get them to come back. I think it's going to be generational. We're going to find certain generations that want to be back in the office full time. They like, you know, the culture and the social aspect of it, and going out for drinks after work. And then I think you're going to have certain generations that say, you know what, I don't need to commute an hour and a half each way and spend time getting to an office and then come back. So I think there's going to be a happy balance that I don't think anyone has found yet. I think we'll get there. In our recruiting, we are finding that there are a number of candidates that say, I don't want to go back to an office. I only want a remote role. Mm-hmm. So it's becoming a challenge. It really is becoming a challenge.
Yeah. No, for sure. And I think it's going to take a lot of experimentation through the next period.
Yeah.
To really find a happy medium for whatever the setup is. We briefly touched upon kind of the war for talent out there. So many opportunities, kind of candidate driven market. And also, you know, retention becomes of utmost importance for a lot of organizations to hold on, retain and promote and grow their top talent within the organizations. What have you observed lately as far as trends and kind of the war on retention, so to say? And what are some of your recommendations for some of your client companies when it comes to retaining the top talent?
Communicate with your staff, listen to them, you know, watch for signs. I think, again, a lot of it is going to have to do with where they have people work. You know, if you have a group of people that really want to be remote and you force them back to the office, you're probably going to have turnover, okay? And vice versa. You may have people that want to be back in the office, and if you're keeping them remote and have no chance of bringing them back, you may have turnover then too. So I think it's going to be a happy medium. You know, people want to be listened to. They want their candidates, employees, while they're concerned about the employer's mission, they're really also concerned about number one. So I think the employers have to watch that and listen to the staff and pay attention to what's motivating them. And, you know, listen, maybe it's a hybrid model, okay? Maybe it's money. Maybe, you know, there are things going on that you have to listen to. So I'm a big believer in communication, okay? Mm-hmm. You have to communicate with the staff both ways. You know, if you're unhappy, I say this to employees, if you're unhappy, speak to your manager, speak to your supervisor, you know, let them know what's going on. See if there's something you could come to terms with before you go and give them the ultimatum that you're leaving, right? Which is also another very important topic, which we can maybe talk about another time with the counterparts. Okay. Worst thing to do. Okay. I always tell people, when you've gotten to the point that you want to leave, and then all of a sudden your employer says, no, don't leave. I'll give you whatever you want, whether it's money, title, position, et cetera. If you had to threaten them to get to that point, you didn't solve anything, because they'll remember it. They'll remember it on the next layoff. They'll remember it on the next promotion. Okay, it was a disloyalty. So I haven't seen any counteroffers that ended well in 40 years.
Yeah, for sure. No, those are great perspectives and insights kind of into the, you know, very loaded question in the sense
that absolutely. We could
probably spend the whole episode talking about
this. Yeah, without a doubt, I could tell you stories, nightmares for people.
Yeah, those kind of the war stories, so to say. Len, from a perspective of you being an industry thought leader, and you obviously been in this for a while, so I'm sure you research, read a lot on, you know, staying on top of the game, ahead of the curve. Share with us your sources for learning. What is your content diet looking like?
Sure. Anything from staffing industry analysts, anything from the staffing industry associations that gets put out. I do a lot of master classes. Okay. I was fortunate. My daughter and son-in-law gave me a gift of a year's worth of master classes. And I think it was the greatest gift I ever got. Okay, because I could watch anybody and everyone. I've done master classes from Howard Schultz, from Starbucks, to John Vos and Daniel Pink. From a reading viewpoint, I read a lot of books on negotiation. I just find it interesting. I like to watch different strategies from that viewpoint. Read an interesting book by Ken Langone called I Love Capitalism, which was an interesting book on his viewpoint. He's a pretty interesting guy. I read a lot of management books and negotiation books, sales books, marketing books, anything to try to keep me on top of the game. Okay. Because I always feel I'm never too old to learn. I tell everyone, the day I tell you I know everything is the day I'll retire. Okay. So I don't think that day is going to come too soon, because I still learn every day.
That's awesome. No, I love those examples, in masterclass as well. I actually, you mentioned those three. Those are the first ones that I've actually listened to. What a great, great resource, library from that perspective. Mm-hmm. So you've mentioned a few books that you recommended. Is there one that you always recommend to others, and why is that?
I can't say that there's one. I mean, I like the Daniel Pink and John Voss's books on sales and negotiation. They really resonate with me, with their strategies. Daniel Burris is a good author. He has a series on the anticipatory organization, trying to predict trends in industry, in any industry. I saw him at a conference 2 years ago. So I find his books pretty interesting as well. Like I said, I'm kind of a junkie for stuff like that. But then I have a dear friend who's an author who writes murder mysteries, okay? And he has one called The Tale of Two in the Trunk. He's a retired New York City police detective, Tony Solano. He happens to be a personal friend, so he's writing the series. So I like his books as well, just when I want to get off of business, okay? Because I like the criminal mind.
No, that's awesome. I love these recommendations, and we'll make those titles available in the show notes with the episode. Len, can't thank you enough for your time today. It was very short but information-packed conversation. I personally learned quite a bit. What I love doing with a lot of my guests, besides staying in touch and, doing another episode in about a year, see how much of change transpired, revisit the old conversation, and riff on that from there on out.
Sounds like a plan.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Stay well.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.